Hello and welcome to UX Maturity. This is a podcast about the challenges and joys of being a UX or product designer in the tech industry. I'm your co-host, Sandrine.
And I'm your co-host, Susan.
If you'd like to find out a bit more about us, you can find us on Twitter at UX_maturity. And we also have a website, which is uxmaturitypodcast.com. If you have some time and you would like to rate the podcast on your platform, it will be also super useful for us. It helps us to know how we're doing. So thank you for anyone who's rating us. And today we are doing episode 56, and we are doing our last topic on our theme about management. And we're going to talk about managing yourself or managing ourselves. So Susan, as a first question, I guess this is a bit of a weird thing to say, but when you're thinking about managing yourself, what comes to mind to you? And what do you think that refers to?
This is the third episode we've done on management. And you know, when you've looked at a word for so long, it becomes meaningless. I have that sense with the term management now, or managing. But actually, I think this whole concept of managing yourself or managing myself is extra relevant for me right now, because I'm recently self-employed, so I don't have a manager. I'm my own manager, so to speak. And so I guess managing myself is extra relevant for me. But in general, whether or not you're permanent or self-employed, I think managing yourself can be thought about from different perspectives, or different levels of granularity. There's managing yourself on your kind of day-to-day project and your teams, and kind of managing your productivity, which we talked about, or managing your progress on whatever project you're working on. So the sort of like day-to-day self-management. And then if you go a level up, you can also think about managing yourself in terms of your progression within that company you're in, within your current job. Of course, I hope you have a manager who supports you in that, but there's of course the element of managing yourself through your own career progression as well. And then I was thinking about going another step above the concept of managing yourself in terms of your career. So I never know how to answer these questions, but you know, that classic interview question of where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm not sure if that's a good question or not, but anyway, my point is that kind of taps into, you know, how you think about your career as a whole. Where do you want to go? Do you want to eventually become a people manager? Do you want to become a head of department? Do you want to be an individual contributor? Different perspectives, I think, in terms of thinking about managing yourself.
Yeah, that covers a lot of what I was thinking about as well. I think beyond the basic time productivity management of like, of course, like you have to kind of manage your own time and so forth. I'm also thinking that I like what you said about managing yourself regarding your own growth and development. And for me, that also makes me think about how we as individuals kind of must manage ourselves in terms of self-reflection and kind of being able to, you know, look back on how we've been doing, performing, being able to notice patterns, things that trigger us, things that we find challenging at work, things that are easier for us at work as well, things we enjoy, and kind of, yeah, I guess for me that part of self-reflection is immensely useful because it might help you react better in the future as well, or adapt better to change or a difficult situation as well. So yeah, I'm also thinking about these aspects now, quite essential for self-management.
The analogies I always think about when I think about, you know, having a manager versus managing yourself is having a therapist versus taking what you learn from therapy and applying it into your day-to-day life, or having a PT, a personal trainer, and then taking what you learn from the PT and applying it in your own continued physical health. Or I'm learning Italian now, and I'm an Italian tutor. And I'm having to take what I get out of those tutoring lessons and apply it into my day-to-day life. So it's sort of like thinking about yes, you might have a coach or a manager or a teacher or a trainer who's equipping you with the tools and helping you set goals and kind of helping you manage whatever it is that you're trying to grow in. But most of the work you have to do yourself. You can't rely on, you know, that one therapy session a week or that one one-to-one with your manager a week or et cetera. The analogy continues. You can't rely on that 1 hour to be everything. Like, most of the work happens outside of that. So I think that those principles apply to self-management as well.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Nothing happens unless it comes from within at some point. So nobody can do the work for you, unfortunately. It's never that easy.
So getting a bit specific, I guess, let's take a common example. If you work in a place where you and your manager set objectives for yourself and your personal growth, and maybe you have, you spend your one-to-ones kind of going through them, or you have some sort of, career framework where you put them somewhere explicit so that they're tangible. How do you then go away from the one-to-ones with your manager and self-manage your way through those objectives? Do you have examples of how you do that?
I guess it's a classic example of practice makes perfect. Is that the expression? Just like, you know, going back to example of learning a language, you can't expect to learn Italian if you don't go on and try to read in Italian, listen in Italian, speak Italian. Like, it's just not going to happen. So you're going to have to take it into your own hands and practice. And I guess if you define growth goals, then you need to figure out how do you want to learn and how do you want to grow in that field. And I guess, yeah, it's about setting yourself up for success so that you have enough time for practice. You can identify courses that you might want to take, or I don't know, projects that you might be able to take at work, you know, side projects that you might be able to do. Basically just figuring out how can you get some practice on these things. I think sometimes a lot of people as well stay in the theoretical space, and I think you often learn faster when you do. So if you can actually try to put things in practice, it's quite fast. It's usually something, at least I found for myself, works better and gives you more applicable experience, I guess, in that domain. So yeah, it's a very basic advice. But I've noticed sometimes that, yeah, some people, I mean, I've done it myself sometimes, it's just waiting for the thing to happen and you kind of, you know that it's there as an objective, but you don't put the time in towards it. And it's really hard because sometimes you just keep procrastinating or delaying it. But sometimes it's just about taking one small step of like putting 1 hour towards it and that's it. And not judging yourself for only spending an hour on it. Now is better than nothing. So yeah, it's kind of just getting over that line of like starting the practice. It might be scary at first. Like when I was learning English, I was terrified of speaking English in front of people. You have to do it at some point. Like there's no way around it. It's getting yourself out of your comfort zone. And you can try to do it in small steps. You can do it with people you're comfortable with, or I don't know, like you can try to make things a little bit easier on you, but you still have to jump. There's no denying it. You still have to jump. You can just make sure there's a mattress at the bottom to receive you. That's all. A mattress or a parachute? Parachute might be better.
Oh, I don't know what I'd prefer. I think, Yeah, I agree with practice makes perfect, because that's also how I learn, by practicing whatever thing it is that I want to grow in. And so that's a huge chunk of how I and probably lots of people self-manage their growth as well. Just do it and do it more often. But yeah, it's interesting also what you said about how we sometimes procrastinate things. It makes me wonder, how do you know if the goals or the growth objectives you set for yourself are the right ones? So some people self-manage themselves quite easily if the goals they want to achieve are super motivating for them. But sometimes it might be a bit harder to get started, or it might be a bit harder to learn the thing that, you know, you've committed yourself to learning. And when do we know it's just because we're procrastinating and we'll pick it up later. And when do we know, oh, maybe that wasn't the right goal to set? You know, how do you balance those feelings?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think sometimes we procrastinate as well because we're just a bit afraid. We're like afraid that if we start it, it's not going to be perfect, or that it's too late to like start a new skill or something like that. There's like all these silly things that get into your head, basically. But anyway, how do you recognize if these are the right goals for you? I think there should be some form of inspiring goals to some extent, even if you're procrastinating on the goal. This happened to me, to procrastinate on a goal that I know would benefit me. I know I would enjoy reaching, working towards and all that. I think there must be some kind of, I guess, excitement or a kind of a picture that happens in your mind of like something that feels a bit thrilling at the idea of achieving that goal. I don't know. Or something that you know is really linked to an interest that you have. I don't know. I think you usually get some kind of indications. I think goals that are really unmotivating, yeah, will be things that you know you're utterly disinterested in. I totally procrastinate on those. and so do loads of people. So I think these are things you don't even want to pick up. Like for me, when I have a goal that I'm procrastinating on, but I know I want to still, you know, keep it, the goal keeps coming back in my mind and I keep beating myself over the fact that I'm procrastinating about it because I'm like, why have I not done that yet? Or like, you know, I need to make time for this weekend, or I need to plan to make this happen. There's like that question of planning or starting that comes back in my mind. And that's, I think that's not there for goals that you're just, that you don't even, you know, give a shit about. So yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes you might be in an environment where you and your manager set goals for you that are the types that you're not so motivated to do. Maybe you have, let's say, 5 goals for a quarter, and 4 of them make you really excited and 1 of them makes you less excited, but that one that makes you less excited is still quite important, maybe because that's what you need to achieve in order to get a promotion your company or your design team has created a design framework, the career framework that is quite, I don't want to say rigid, but that's, you know, structured. And so there's some element of, rigor to it. And, you know, at the end of the day, we all need to do things we're uncomfortable with as well. But and it's kind of like homework in school, right? Like you have some subjects you like and some you don't, and then the ones you don't, you just procrastinate.
I would make a difference between goals and tasks. Like we're all gonna have to do things as part of our daily job that we enjoy less than others. So yeah, I think with goals, I agree that, especially the case of the career framework, that can be quite structured, I think is a good one. But I feel like your end goal is still to reach that promotion. So in a way, like you still know that that's the right goal, that's still the right thing. Obviously, you might be less excited about some tasks you need to do as part of that growth goal, but it's still an interesting, motivating goal for you to pursue. So it should help you put a momentum in place, I guess. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also, we talked about treating your career and your progression as a product as well before, in the episode with Sarah Duty. And I think part of that is to bring in a bit of product thinking into how you self-manage your career growth. So for example, to what you said about fear as well, like sometimes we procrastinate because something about the objective or the task makes a bit nervous or fearful because it's new and you might not know how to do it properly. It might sometimes help to break down that big task or objective into smaller milestones so that you get a sense of, well, number one, so it seems less big and scary and easy to procrastinate on, and number two, so you get a bit of feedback and reward quicker. So I'm thinking about this because it reminds me of when I was quite fresh as a UX designer, one of these objectives that I had in my career development was to become better at communication or doing presentations or something like that. I can't remember what exactly the goal was, but my manager and I set these tasks for me to do, which was to do these very, very big, very big presentations for lots and lots of people. And going from not doing any presentations at all to doing, you know, these live demos in front of 200 people is that's scary when you're a junior designer. And so what really helped was to my point about bringing a bit of product thinking into this and breaking that into smaller steps, what really helped was to identify the stepping stones we could I could do to get to that final objective, which was to do more presentations within my department, within my team, and kind of frog boil me or kind of ease me into that kind of bigger, scarier goal at the end. And by doing those smaller presentations, I got feedback more quickly and felt the reward of doing it as well. So this is just an example, but the principle is, you know, break down that scary thing that you're procrastinating into smaller, less scary things that give you feedback and reward quicker. What do you do when you try to grow yourself to manage your progression within a company, within your current environment, and you feel like you're not getting anywhere?
I feel like we've all kind of hit that spot in our career at some point. I think maybe that's when it's time to assess whether you have the right goal, the right attitude towards the goal, the right support to reach your goal. I think that's when you need to start questioning. I think for me, when the few times happened is when, yeah, I was trying or I had a goal in mind, and I think there was a clear lack of either support or clear set of milestones for me to know even how to reach that goal. And that's when it gets a bit frustrating because you're just trying a lot of things. You feel like you're doing a few things right, but the reward's not coming yet. And I guess you just don't get enough detailed feedback to, I guess, help you move forward, I guess. So, yeah. So I think that's probably when you need to start wondering if you have enough understanding of what it takes to reach that goal. And if you also have the right set of supports in terms of, you know, mentors, are you able to learning what you need to learn from the people around you? If not, then where can you go get that knowledge? I guess, yeah, there's a whole bunch of questions like that can occur. But it can be a bit self-defeating sometimes. And I think sometimes it also gets you to just take time to also just let it go for a little bit and just mule over the whole thing, and just figure out as well if that's a goal that you still want to pursue or not. Sometimes just giving a bit of time, you can decide if you might have renewed energy that comes back after a bit of rest, and you may have new ideas to tackle that new goal, or it might just die of its, you know, on its own, because you start discovering that maybe there are other things that you might actually enjoy doing. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it helps to be a bit flexible with it. I found myself in situations before where I felt that, oh, I feel so stuck here, I'm not reaching my goals. And then, I mean, one option is to leave that company and find a different job. But then I also have experienced myself that I found, without planning to, I found other things that I enjoyed in that environment that I wouldn't have thought. So yeah, kind of, I suppose, like, to your point about letting it go for a bit, it's a bit like, you know, when you get tunnel vision on your goals, almost, just look away from the goals, like poke your head up, look around the room that is your company, and what are the other teams doing? What are the other disciplines doing? What are the other parts of the product? You know, are there things you can learn? Just refresh your mind a bit from the track you've set yourself. That can sometimes help. But yeah, it's quite tricky. And I think it's because career growth isn't, it's not a science. Like, you can't predict.
Yeah, I agree. There's a huge luck factor into career progression. Like, the luck of having the right mentors, the right managers who are going to be clicking with you and supporting you in the right way. Like, you know, the luck of, like, getting that job because you were on the market at the right time, having the right opportunities. Like, so much luck that is needed. And yeah, I guess sometimes the luck is just not there and it happens. I think there's some issues as well that, you know, discrimination issues or glass ceiling issues that some of us just feel as well every day. And that they get against our goals quite aggressively sometimes. And I think that's when sometimes you feel like you're muddling through and you don't really know what to try next because you don't even understand what's against you. It's not really appearing. It's like a ghost barrier almost. So yeah, I think this can be really tough. And unless you can find mentors that maybe have gone through that, find a way around or find a better opportunity, sometimes you might not really know how to correct path, basically.
Yeah, those hidden forces that go against you are really hard to self-manage against. Yeah, because they're really... sad thing is, even though we try our hardest to, you know, we manage what we can, we can only control what we can control. There are so many forces against a lot of us that we can't control, and most of the time we can't even see, so we don't even know what we're pushing against. And for that, for those situations, I think if you have the opportunity, if you have the privilege, I tend to look for places, environments, teams, companies, managers that truly encourage growth. So it could be that you know, you have specific career objectives of learning a specific subdiscipline of design or reaching a certain level of promotion and that sort of thing. The quite let's say hard objectives, but I find that it's very difficult to reach those objectives if you're not in an environment where your manager and the organization is open-minded and kind and all of these, this is very gendered, but all of these softer things. And it sounds fluffy, but you could be in the most sophisticated, design mature, design-led company, but if you're not in an environment which is psychologically safe and open-minded and progressive and self-aware and aware of their own biases in hiring, in leadership, and so on, if you're not in that sort of environment, it can be hard to grow. So yeah, back to my point, which is if you can look out for those type of things in environments you're considering to go into. I think that's my advice. Anyway, it's certainly helped me. When I started switching from looking at what sort of technologies I wanted to work with or what sort of industries I wanted to work with, I still care about those. But when I started putting less emphasis on that and more emphasis on kindness, self-awareness, psychological safety, open-mindedness, all of those things, I grew so much more and I could self-manage myself so much better.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that choosing the right environment for you, I think we've said it in a few other episodes, but yeah, your environment, and if you have the ability to choose the environment, it will be, yeah, so much more helpful. So absolutely agree with this. All right, so we've talked quite a bit about I guess goals and managing our own growth. I feel like sometimes people, and I mean, all of us can sometimes struggle a bit with, I guess, managing workloads, energy level, time, productivity. And I am wondering what's the best way to self-manage? And maybe you have a few lessons now that you've been a contractor as well, around, yeah, managing your time and managing your workload as well, now that you don't really have anyone, actually, especially when you're in a situation where you don't have anyone managing that for you? Because sometimes when you have a manager, obviously they will make sure that, you know, you're not overloaded with work. There's some jobs where we don't have, obviously, this luxury, and contractors often don't. So yeah, I was wondering if you have a few lessons to share.
Yeah, well, less is more is a big one for me. The fewer things I have in progress, the better. This is a principle that goes across a lot of things. It goes into product development, right? Like the principle of Kanban, for example, is to limit the amount of things you have in the in progress column on the Kanban board. And I think that is the same when it comes to managing yourself, whether it's managing your workload or managing your time or managing your projects or career objectives. Have fewer, more focused things to do in progress, I would say. And then the other thing that I'm reflecting a lot about is I look at my career holistically and look at, okay, what am I good at now, do I feel? What is my, you know, that spider diagram of design specialisms? Is it called a spider diagram? Anyway, it's everywhere. It's like, rate yourself on user research skills, rate yourself on UX skills, and so on. Mm-hmm. I find, regardless of whether you're a permanent or a contractor, if you're full-time in a job or self-employed, I think it, and regardless of whether it's your manager who encourages this or not, I find it useful to sit down and map out your own craft skills or your own kind of experience and skills and think about, evaluate for yourself, do I want to become even more specialist in these two things that I'm already quite good at, or do I want to kind of flesh out these other skills that I'm okay at? So for me, for example, I spent about a year and a half being quite hands-off in design because I learned a lot more in terms of team leadership and product strategy and these more higher level things. And I could have self-managed myself in that direction and continued in that trajectory, which I do want to do at some point. But then I sat down and thought, you know what, I also want to brush up and reheat up my hands-on design skills. So I want to do more hands-on design again, which I haven't done for quite a while I was learning these other things. And then I was, and in order to do that, I specifically looked for opportunities where I could practice those hands-on design skills again. So it's sort of like, it's self-reflection, like you said in the beginning, kind of sit down, take stock, where am I now? Where do I want to go? And how do I get there? It's sort of like the basics of, I was talking to an old manager about this week, actually. We're talking about Melissa Perry's product kata, which is, you're nodding, okay, so you know what I'm talking about, which is sort of, this applies to product strategy, but you can apply that to the product strategy of your career as well, I guess. You assess your current condition. Well, first you have a strategy or a vision or a goal for where you want to go, and then you look at your current state, current condition, assess that, and then you create an action plan for how you want to get to the end goal, or you identify your end goal and then you create an action plan for your end goal. It's a very messy way of explaining it. The point is, sit down, look at where you are, and then make a game plan for how you want to get to where you want to be. But yeah, back to the point on how you manage your time and your workload. I find that, I think this is a bit of a personality thing, because in an old episode now, Leo and I talked about how we notionify our life. So Notion is, you know, this tool we use to organize a lot of our stuff. And to manage my own workload, time, energy, I tend to use tools like this, like Notion, like Google Drive, like all these productivity tools to kind of keep track of everything. If you don't have a personality that manages your time like that, I don't know. My partner is the opposite of me. And what he does is he uses Google Calendar to manage his life, but he uses Google Calendar in like this time agnostic way, even though a calendar isn't time agnostic. The core concept of a calendar is time. But anyway, he puts reminders and to-dos and everything under the sun in his calendar. I'm just making this point to say that it really depends on your personality. Figure out kind of these hacks of self-management that works for you. And yeah, you find a tool, the appropriate tools to do that, regardless of whether or not those tools are meant to be used like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I found out for me, productivity tools just, I mean, I love Notion and I use Notion for some things, but I don't track my life on Notion. I don't add my schedules on Notion. Like, I don't, I'm very, very chaotic actually. And I try to bring the chaos into a bullet journal usually. And that's the only thing I've managed to keep regularly. Although I have not been doing it the last week. So you see, there's a few weeks missing in it. But that's what I love about the bullet journal, is that you can pick it up wherever you want. If you've missed a week, nobody's there to judge you. So I quite like it to just dump everything. And it's on paper. So I feel like, yeah, it's just, I like the fact that it's not on screen. And yeah, it's just something I can carry with me everywhere. So it can have personal stuff and yeah, work stuff. It can be mixed, which is quite convenient sometimes, because you have loads of things in your mind sometimes that are not about work. And sometimes you just need to put it down in the list as a thing to do or something to remember. So yeah, I find that quite helpful for that.
This is a bit of a tangent, but I suddenly thought about, you know, when people have like fitness goals, for example, they create like a dedicated social account, like an Instagram account, just for those fitness goals. And then they say, I've created this to keep myself accountable. And I wonder, can we apply that thinking to managing ourselves in a context of our, either our workloads and, you know, time and energy, or bigger things like our career growth as well? Are there ways we can kind of, yeah, like, outwardly express what we're trying to do to keep ourselves accountable?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a variety of things that we're accountable for at work. Obviously, we're accountable for deliveries. We might be accountable for people as well. So I guess depending on what you think you should be held accountable for, you might want to try a different approach. For me, I guess in terms of projects, it really helps, and I need to do that because I work in bursts, so I need to keep myself accountable. Exactly. So I try to plan weekly catch-ups, either with my PM or with engineers, where I show work in progress. There's been times where I didn't have this, and I tend to either work at slower pace or give less communication. Obviously, these things are not good. So, yeah, having that weekly cadence is really helpful without putting too much pressure on yourself, because, you know, there's some weeks where some stuff won't have happened that you had planned for. And that's fine. You can communicate about that. I think what people forget sometimes is that it's okay that you didn't have the best week, but you can still communicate. You can still talk. You can tell your colleagues that, you know what, you plan to deliver this, that did not happen, this is what you've done instead. And then you can plan and you can discuss how you plan obviously to, you know, I guess solve that situation next time. I think communication can go a long way, and it's often, yeah, quite helpful. And yeah, I guess having those regular things in your calendar that, you know, like, it gives a bit of cadence, momentum, in your week, and you know that you're aiming towards a deadline, and deadlines is another big one. Personal deadlines don't work for me. Like, if I tell myself I have to do it by tomorrow and nobody's holding me accountable for a deadline, it's, you can be sure that I'm gonna miss it. I am terrible at this, so that's why I am putting other people I bring other people in with the deadlines. So a weekly check-in with my team means that my team is involved, so my team have expectations about me showing things. So yeah, I'm sounding like the worst human being right now, missing all my deadlines. So I do these weekly check-ins because it helps me. Sometimes I'll miss one, but I'll try to also explain why. I tell that there won't be an update, because sometimes it happens.
Yeah, yeah, all of those I subscribe to and do as well. And then if I can add to it a little a little thing, a little behavior I tend to do to manage myself at work is, okay, so this is only applicable to certain types of situations, this little thing, but I used to work in a place that was very, very small, very startup-y, and it, at the time, it didn't need to have these, it didn't need to have, for example, objectives and key results or these kind of team-wide milestones and deadlines. Everything was quite, you know, everyone was a individual contributor, sort of like roaming around, self-managing themselves. And so thinking back on my question about like, how might you keep yourself accountable? What I did in that situation when there were no kind of, what are they called, like guardrails to keep myself accountable, I kind of kept myself accountable by starting this behavior where on Mondays, I would write on Slack in public channels, like, these are my goals for the week. I'd set my own goals because, you know, everything was small and startup-y and messy. These are my goals for the week. And then every Friday, I would write a message on Slack in the same place. Just not a big wall of text, just kind of summarizing to what extent I had reached those goals I set myself on Monday. I would copy paste the goals and kind of reflect on, self-reflect in the open about how well I had achieved my own goals. And then have some loose thoughts about my goals for next week. But this was on Friday. And then I would revisit those loose thoughts the following Monday and set my new goals. And this is, you know, because the environment at the time was made for everyone to self-manage themselves. There was, you know, at the time there was no kind of team-wide management. That really helped me and it helped keep me accountable. And it was also forgiving because the Friday self-reflection allowed me to sometimes go, okay, well, I reached two of my three goals. I didn't reach the third goal because of these reasons. And, you know, sometimes you don't reach your goals. If you always reach your goals every single week, then maybe your goals aren't ambitious enough. And that was also something I learned through those self-reflections in public. But yeah, just a little tip that maybe some of our listeners might want to try to manage themselves and keep themselves accountable.
I like what you say actually about accountability regarding, you know, setting up goals and having goals. And I think sometimes we obviously define accountability regarding your own deliveries, things that you deliver. But there's also things that you're accountable for in terms of outcomes, results, impacts, you know, that you have on the product, your users, the business, or your team as well. I think that's quite useful to sometimes just clarify for yourself as well what you hold yourself accountable for. Like as a designer, I hold myself accountable for the quality of the experience I put out there. And I hold myself accountable for having impact with my work. Like if I get bad results after launching something, obviously, you know, it's always a learning lesson and sometimes things don't go in the right direction. But I hold myself accountable for those results. And I'm wondering then, okay, well, if we didn't meet our targets, then the question is around, what did I miss? Did I not actually assess the problem well enough? Was it the solution? You know, what is it that I didn't know at the time? And why did it fail, basically? And kind of, you know, putting yourself back into that questioning phase as well. And yeah, holding yourself accountable to do better next time as well. And I think that's also really important to do that when you do team management as well, at whatever level that you're doing, whether you're managing people in a project or, you know, you're all the way on high leadership as well. It's, yeah, figuring out how's the team doing, you know, are they blocked? Do they have a vision? Do they have clear objectives? Are they happy? You know, like, I think you also need to hold yourself accountable for these things. And if these things are not going well, it also needs to, you know, start that kind of reflection period of, all right, I was accountable for these things and I clearly didn't deliver on those things. Maybe not all of it was also my doing, but maybe there are things that I did not see coming and I could have done better. So I guess, yeah, I think sometimes we forget to think of what we hold ourselves accountable for in more than just our project deliveries. And I think that's pretty important because it also touched a bit with your role responsibilities, but also your values sometimes. Like, you might hold yourself accountable for, like, I hold myself accountable for having, you know, a safe work environment with my direct team, for example. I feel like I contribute to that. And, you know, if I was to deteriorate that working relationship, for example, I don't know, I feel like I have an accountability into that as well. So does everyone else in that team. So there are things like that that I feel like we need to think about. And they're a very subtle self-management thing, maybe, that we don't always think, but I think they're super key.
Yeah, I love absolutely everything you said. Completely agree. And I think it really emphasizes the importance of the self-reflection part. You know, in the same way that teams, when there's an outage, teams will do postmortems or retrospectives or five whys or root cause analysis and all of these things. And it's important to think about that when you manage yourself as well. But also, like you said, think about, you know, what is the impact I want to have here? It goes a bit back to knowing whether or not you set the right goals as well. Like, if the goal is to deliver XYZ, are they necessarily the right goals? Like, are deliverables the goals, or is a specific outcome the goal? So yeah, going back to outcomes over output, and also going back to the point of productizing your career.
Okay, so I think we went quite wide on that topic, on self-management, mostly focusing on goals, accountability, a little bit of time management, just a little bit. So let's jump into our segment this week. Susan, could you tell us what you are grateful for this week?
I feel like I need to compensate for my gratitude from a few episodes back, where I was grateful for the convenience of Amazon. I just feel a bit pathetic now, but I am genuinely grateful for the different marketplaces out there for secondhand, auctioned, resale, kind of, you know, not being all the marketplaces where you can buy things that are not new. I'm particularly grateful for that this week, because in the last couple of weeks, I think most of my shopping, which isn't a lot anyway, but the old me, usually when I shop, I buy things new because I can't even say it. Like, is there a reason? But I've made a conscious effort lately to buy things secondhand, whether it's furniture or clothes, etc., books. Books I've always loved buying secondhand, because there's something about the used book smell that I love. Yeah, anyway, so I made a conscious effort to do that this week, and it's dawned on me how many more opportunities and marketplaces there are to do that. It used to be, you know, I don't want to... I've already mentioned Amazon, so I'm not going to mention the other one that we all really know. But, you know, like, my point is there are so many out there, and I find that really positive and great, and I'm really grateful that... this area is growing.
Yeah, I definitely support that. I've been also trying to buy a bit more secondhand, especially like more vintage furniture and these sort of things, which actually are way better than anything new, because they have that charm, I guess, that new furniture just does not have. So yeah, I really, really enjoy that as well. I guess I'm going to say a very cheesy gratitude, because I'm going to be talking about cheese. With the return of the colds, my appetite is back double. So yeah, it's the return of like being able to cook things in the oven with lots of cheese and all of that. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to all the winter dishes that we're going to be able to have soon, or actually just right now. So yeah, I'm just grateful that the cold is back and that cheese is there as well, which is, yeah, very weird gratitude. But for any cheese lovers out there, I'm sure you know.
What's your favorite cheese?
I don't know. I don't think I have a favorite one. I definitely have some that I really enjoy. Like, depends if you're craving melted cheese, or like cheese that you'd have like as a, you know, as a starter, like, you know, with just crackers or nice bread and stuff like that. I don't know if I have a favorite one. I tend to like quite creamy cheese or like goat cheese for like having with bread or crackers. Otherwise, I love raclette because obviously I'm from France, so definitely doing lots of raclette in the winter. So yeah,
should start a cheese podcast.
Absolutely. All right, this is it for episode 56. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week for a different episode, different theme, different everything. So yeah, see you next week.